8. A lot of talk locally about short-term rentals. Of course, the city of Port Angeles right now collects some data on short-term rentals and perhaps the effect that has on housing and affordable housing as well. We've heard a lot of one side of this discussion about that might be a big part of the problem, but there's a whole nother side to this I want to talk about, and that's what we're going to do with my guest, Stephen Pelayo, who's actually been doing a very deep dive into all of this with some public records requests and even just a lot of just hit the street sort of research on his own. Steve does own an STR, but also has helped organize the Olympic Peninsula Lodging Alliance in all of this as well. Steve, thanks for coming on. And first, let's talk about the Alliance so folks kind of know what this is all about.
Sure. So we formed a 501c6 organization, and it really came out of a private Facebook group of about 200 individuals. And this ranges from owners of short-term rentals to the support crew there, whether you're interior designers, gardeners, cleaners, to event planners, whether, you know, you're hosting a run here or a music festival or something like that. Everybody's just trying to look out for really the best interest for our community and really realize that, you know, tourism is an important driver, both from the big picture, the people coming to see the Olympic National Park, as well as the local events that we have going on here.
Let's, and so with that, I mean, I think it's surprising when people realize just how many folks, this exploded, so to speak, if you want, as to this alliance coming together. And really, I think this was driven a lot on the back of this moratorium that arrived.
Correct. Yeah, the moratorium, I really don't have any issue with that. The moratorium, I think, is a little misunderstood. There's a lot of confusion out there. The moratorium was really not to ban anything. It was so much just to let's stop where we're at right now. Let's hire a consultant, this third party called GovOS, to provide us some data so then we can make more informed decisions going forward. And you're right, that moratorium is set to end in a couple of days here. I imagine city council meeting coming up this next week. They'll figure out what they're going to do. But our group is really all for education. Let's see what the data says and let's talk about the issues and what's best for our community. We think tourism is a key piston in our economic engine, and given the fact that we've seen a decrease in hotel capacity, it's probably something we shouldn't be so quick to try to ban.
So let's get into some of the data that you have uncovered, you've released, you shared with us. Some of this, I think, is surprising to people. I think given the narrative that might be out there generally, they think, oh, my gosh, there must be thousands of these. It must just be over the top and it's every house is an STR. That's not the case.
You're absolutely right. I think we read the news and some people think, oh, God, we're Miami. People are coming. You know, the number one complaints for short-term rentals around the nation are more noise and parking. And people don't come here for that. People bring their family here to explore the outdoors and then come back and have a nice meal. Really, that's it. But let me set the stage for you a little bit. I mean, I'm a former financial analyst, investment banker, so I like the numbers. But I'll try to keep it really simple for you here. We have roughly 20,000 population here. We have roughly 10,000 homes, okay? About 30% of those are occupied by retirees. Now, clearly, the marine and timber industries are very important for us, but when you look behind the data there, OMC, the schools, the county, the city, the college, those are the top five employers here. So really, we're a community that's driven by tax dollars. We need an expanding tax base to support that. So I've put all that in there to say that this brings me straight to tourism. So tourism is clearly, again, that key economic piston in, for our engine here in this town. And so we can't certainly abandon that. And some of the potential risks that we're looking at here is city council's potentially looking to ban it in one of our zones. It happens to be our largest zone, probably about 90% of homes in our community. And in doing so, it would probably turn off 150 to 200 of these. So overall, we think that out of the 10,000 housing stock, probably somewhere around 200 to 300. Let's call it 2 to 3%. I think I'm being conservative if I said under 4%. So 96% of the housing stock in town is still very much available. It's just really some of the debate that goes on where we could really place these. And if you go back to even some of our original zoning laws, they started in 1907. Some were even rewritten February this year, and how we redefined our major R7 zone. And in doing so, we've tried to do things like help our affordable housing crisis by allowing things like more infill and cottages and ADUs. But we also changed the definition to get rid of single family use, no longer low density, now mixed use. But it logically feels that if we're going to have mixed use, we should probably allow short-term rentals in these areas as well. So this is some of the debate that's going on. And so we need to look not only at future regulations, having a registration, a business license and permit, maybe inspections and things like that, but also try to make sure we deal with even the past regulations all at the same time, come up with a new clean set going forward that maybe caps the percentage that we have in here. You've seen in some counties like Chelan that have done caps is anywhere from 6 to 15% on some end. So if we're down at 2-3%, I actually would argue that we don't really have a short-term rental problem here. And a lot of these people, if anything, they're actually kind of ambassadors for our community. They're investors in our community. We can talk about it a little bit later, but I think some of the shocking data that came out for me in my digging was that if you look at the Housing Action Plan, it showed that at that point in time, this is 2019 survey, it was estimated as much as 1,100 homes were vacant. And because we obviously know what's going on at utilities, at that point it was 400 properties had inactive electrical service. In fact, we did another public records request recently that said that that number is now at 700. So I don't know if it's gotten worse, but it is interesting to me that 2 to 3 times as many short-term rentals are vacant or have an active electrical service. So again, these are the areas that I think we have some, a lot of underutilized assets where I'd rather be focusing on rather than punishing the people that are actually investing in our community and making their properties nice.
In your alliance of folks, you can't speak for everybody, but give the public a bit of an idea of what a typical owner-operator of an STR is right now in Port Angeles.
So it's interesting. I think if you read some of the social media specs, there's this perspective. These people are making gobs of money. And I think you're right in terms of the key peak crab fest weekend, the same way that the Red Lion's going to charge you $400 a night for a room there. You're right. In the big season, things are great. But we're also, the reason why we haven't attracted like large corporate entities to come in here and buy a ton of these things up, I think there's been zero of that happening according to a survey by real estate professionals, is we're not really a year-round vacation destination. And so, in fact, it's actually more local people that own some of these short-term rentals. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there. What was the question again?
You were right on it. What the typical owner of an STR?
Then these typical owners do tend to just be local people. Yeah. I had one woman call me, 75 years old. She just rents out her spare bedroom, and she says it's 55% of her income. And to lose that, she actually says that would threaten. She'd be on the homeless risk. We had other people speak very passionately at the city council meetings about, look, they need this supplemental income to survive. So I think if you look across the full year and you think about in season, out of season, we got a great 100-day window, let's say in summer here, and then we have a pretty good few weeks on the shoulder seasons, if you will, and then you have risk of really being empty. And hopefully you can fill it with some medium-term renters, take a traveling nurse for 90 days, somebody remodeling their home, those types of things to occupy it. But I think if you look about it for the full year, nobody's making $400 a night for 360 days a year. Probably something $200 to $300 for that key window. And then you're probably only utilized, let's say, 50, 60% of the year.
You know, Steve, we talked before we went on the air that, your argument is these SDRs are helpful for overall economic, not just the tourism stuff. You've rented to like traveling nurses.
Sure.
I mean, anybody who's followed what's happened here, we can't keep professionals in town because they don't have a place to land. It takes a while to find a permanent house.
Yeah, there's a couple different things that go back there. If you look again at that Housing Action Plan, even recent updates from that, housing supply. So everybody who says, affordable, the housing crisis that's going on, housing prices are going up, let's blame short-term rentals. I mean, I think first you have to go to inflation. You have to go to interest rates. And we're not immune from the macro economy here. We can't be our own little island. And then probably third is supply. And that's what speaks to what you're hinting to there. As it turns out, we've built on average less than 50 homes per year for the last 15 years or so. This is probably about a third, maybe 40% of our population growth. So this is a problem that's just been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And more importantly is that affordable housing is really a type of housing that we need. We need apartments.
Right.
And we haven't built any of note in 15 years. When you look at some of the data that's out there, and the one thing that I was pointing to, we don't have a lot specific to Port Angeles. We do have some of the housing permit data and things like that. But just even for Clallam County, I was surprised recently looking at some of the economic data to see that our GDP growth is about where it was 10 years ago. We've kind of had a lost decade. And that decade prior to that, we were going in line with Washington and national averages. So something's just kind of gone off here, if you will. And we're still struggling to figure out what are the exact reasons behind that. But I think because of that, it then impacted some of the incentives to get things built. Now, the good news is that the city actually put in some new legislation that I'm a big fan of, some fee waivers to try to encourage building of things like townhouses and duplexes and apartments. So I'm really excited to get those things going. I will tell you on the other side, they've also put some deed restrictions into that as well. So I know a developer in town that owns some property up by the college. It's in a residential medium density, allowed to currently have short-term rentals in there, for example, and he wanted to build some townhomes. And what a brilliant plan. He wanted to have the students there during the school year and then use them as short-term rentals during the summer. Seems like a perfect plan. It turns out with this new fee waiver plan and this new legislation,
can't do that.
Deed restriction, can't have a short-term rental for 10 years. So he's told the city, I'm sorry, I'm not building now. So now we're kind of disencouraging. We're actually disincentivizing some people from developing by some of these restrictions as well.
You know, a lot of, and when I talk with city officials, they'll say this, and I think it's real, the reality. We don't have a lot of places to build. So we have to become more creative in where to build. What do you say about that? Because I think some people may argue, well, get rid of the STRs, we'll take those down, and we'll build apartment buildings in place of those. I'm kind of being far-fetched, but...
No, you're hitting on some key areas. We are a little bit property constrained. So I'm going to tell you that what I really would like to see is just more of a revitalization effort. So we talk about the vacant residential homes that certainly could be providing 2 to 3 times as many capacity as short-term rentals out there. But even when you just look across our community, in fact, I'll come back in 6 months. I think I'm going to be focusing a lot more on vacant commercial real estate that really needs to be repurposed. And so I think we're missing some opportunities, especially even in our downtown, to have more of a vibrant downtown that supports some more housing down there, some more high density housing, some more vertical housing. Let's get some apartments that are going on there as well. So I do think we have a lot of opportunity to just better utilize. Well, heck, let's just utilize some of the places that have been more of a blight, if you will, and underutilized in our town.
And I go back to 700 properties without active utility service on it. That's pretty interesting.
It is a little shocking to me as well. So I don't know the exact number that are homes versus commercial, but they did that same survey back and they did the housing action plan, and the majority were still residential. So again, we come up with this number, 350, 400 or so probably inactive electrical services. And there will also be some vacant homes. Unfortunately, near my house, near the high school, I can point to 3 vacant homes for the last 5 to 10 years within 100 meters of my house. So I don't know if they have the power on. Hopefully, they're at least keeping things warm inside there. So I bet you there's even more vacant homes than what we're seeing with inactive electrical service data.
So what's going to be next with all this?
So I would tell you that the next 4 to 6 weeks are pretty crucial for this community. You're going to see the city's going to come out with an online survey in a couple of weeks. Then they're actually going to be outreach publicly at the ice rink, at the farmer's market, doing some surveys there as well. And then I think it's tentative at this point, but I believe January 11th will be then a community meeting. So we're starting to then, and we're also getting that data back from that third-party consultant, I think any day now as well. So all this is going to be coming together over the next 6 weeks. And our alliance here, Olympic Peninsula Lodging Alliance, will essentially be trying to educate the public. And we think that if you step back and look at the information that we presented here, you'll start to realize that we actually don't have a problem with short-term rentals here. And if anything, they're providing a tremendous benefit. You know, the one thing we didn't mention, which I think's most interesting, is some people seem to think that short-term rentals don't pay lodging taxes. In fact, if you're listed on the VRBO and Airbnb website, you don't even get to see that money. That tax money goes directly up to the state and it's remitted back down here to Port Angeles. And I did a deep dive on that data as well. And it turns out almost a third of our lodging tax, more than $400,000 this year, is coming from short-term rentals. And these lodging tax dollars, they have to be spent on tourism. So isn't it interesting that we now have more money to advertise our town, but we're taking away places for tourists to come stay. So again, I think this goes back to that that issue that it's just a matter of education. And I feel like the merits stand on their own once people know. In fact, Brendan Mayer mentioned this at a city council meeting. He's the deputy mayor. He said he spoke at the high school and a student said, oh, those short-term rentals are bad, right? And he said, well, wait a second, let's walk through some of the data here. And I think the crowd left with, oh, well, wait, maybe that isn't actually an issue. So, yeah, my message over the next 4 to 6 weeks is please go to Olympic Peninsula Lodging Alliance.org, get yourself educated, call me, go to the Facebook. I think we'll have a group that'll point you to the website as well. And I think, I think we address most of the key issues that are out there.
Most of your group, would you support a licensing?
I have yet to hear a single person that doesn't support some type of a registration.
Yeah.
Some type of an annual permitting fee of some kind. There's a lot of different types of regulations that submitting to inspections to make them. Mm-hmm. I think some counties or cities have said there has to be a sign with a hotline phone number that says any issues you call here, for example. Again, you've heard people present at city council to say that they've actually liked the short-term rentals in their community. They took away from a vacant home. They keep the properties nice and clean. There was the past long-term tenant that maybe was a little bit of a hoarder or didn't take care of the property there. So if anything, I think there's been more positive. What's been unfortunate, and this is something that I think you were going to mention and ask about, was that one of our public record requests, and I'm going to go ahead and label this, I branded it Complaint Gate to get a little bit more attention to it, but we did a public records request to try to better understand the complaints that have been filed on short-term rentals. There was about 118 filed, and it turns out that 100 out of the 118, one person filed 70. The second person filed 16. So you get a general idea where this is going, but the bottom line is the top five people were roughly 90% of the complaints. So this perception that this is this citywide public nuisance that's causing problems everywhere is not the reality, to be quite honest. And it's fun to hear some people stand up at city council and say, no, I love them. I like seeing the license plate from another state and then trying to be an ambassador for my town and encouraging them to go check out the tide pools at Salt Creek and make sure you swim in the lake. And so, no, I think if anything, it's been more of a net positive.
Right. The lawns get mowed.
The lawns absolutely
the paint mowed. Stays nice.
So all now that. Just imagine this if we all had a public rating system for our property.
I got a few neighbors. I love that. Yeah.
So yes, Airbnb and VRBO, I think a lot of owners and property managers live and die by that rating. So yes, that property needs to be mowed. That place needs to be clean. You need to be providing, I think, a good solution. And the truth of the matter is that we do have some good hotels in our community, but let's face it, they really doesn't compare. If you're coming with another couple and their children, you're going to rent two or three hotel rooms. An Airbnb or a short-term rental is actually cheaper with a kitchen, a better solution. I get a little bit more exposed to the local community. Just as much as I recommend people go up to Hurricane Ridge, I recommend they take their kids to the Dream Park, to the pump track. We got a lot of fun things that also here in the local community, too. So I think getting people exposed to our local community is probably just as important as putting them at the Red Lion down at the wharf.
Steve Vallejo, thanks for stopping by. Your website again for folks who want to get some of this info?
So, yeah, in closing, I guess I would say, please educate yourself. Go to Olympic Peninsula Lodging Alliance.org. Once again, you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. That'll redirect you directly over to the website and really just educate yourself. These surveys are coming out. These community meetings are coming out. Thanks again for having me.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on